If you want to be opening your Bibles to Psalm 90, we're going to be beginning there in just a moment. You know, one of these weeks, I'm going to have everything set up. It's going to be really, nice transition from the invitation to class. We were closer tonight, but we're still not quite there. So thank y'all for your patience as we get going. Last week, we looked at Psalm 89, which is a lament of God's people when it seems that God's promises have failed. And we don't have time tonight to rehash all of that. But I hope that Psalm 6 with you. It's been one of the standout psalms to me in studying for this class. And because I think we encounter that kind of situation in our own walk with the Lord, that we want to trust Him, we believe Him, but there's many times where it feels like we've been let down or God hasn't come through in the way that we thought He would. And Psalm 89 is a psalm for that. It combines that trust in God with an honest doubt, I don't know if I can put it that way, dealing with when it looks like things have failed on God's side, but continuing to pour that out to God and to look to Him for help. Was everybody able to get a copy of the class for tonight? Everybody good on that? Okay, very good. Well, we're going to do what we've been doing and have just a very brief review here at the beginning of class about just the poetic things that we've talked about. And I hope that as we look at these at the beginning of class each week, that it'll just start to become more automatic, that these things just become familiar to us because they're not just in Psalms, but they're all through the Old Testament poetry that we find. So the parallelism, again, that's the relationship of the lines to each other. Synonymous parallelism, where it's the same thing repeated, but the second line enhances the first. Antithetic parallelism is something that's going to come up a good bit tonight in Psalm 37. This is the Proverbs parallelism, where it'll say, like, the righteous do this and this happens. And then it'll say it the opposite way, but it's making the same point. The wicked do this and this happens. So it's making the same idea, but it's stating it from kind of two sides of the same coin, the righteous and the wicked, something like that. Emblematic parallelism, the Lord is my shepherd kind of a thing. As the deer pants for the water, so my soul longs after you. It's a symbol or an emblem. We talked about inclusio, which is where a phrase appears at the very beginning and the very end of a psalm. It's bookends of poetry. A chiasm is where it's a mirror image. It states things in a certain order and then states them again in a reverse order. And that can happen on a small scale or a big scale. Acrostic is where it all starts, you know, with progressive letters of the alphabet as a memory tool. Hyperbole is important to remember. There's an intentional exaggeration. We're dealing with poetry. Allusion is where there's a reference to something outside the book of Psalms that you have to, like, go to the historical books for. Or even to ancient Near Eastern culture to talk about what that is. And a polemic is where specifically God is held up as better than the gods of the nations, or something is attributed to God that would normally be attributed to a Canaanite god. And it's basically saying our gods can beat up your god is kind of the idea of a polemic. We've talked about the different types of psalms, the praise, the lament, thanksgiving, confidence, historical wisdom, and kingship. We're going to be looking tonight particularly at the wisdom literature. Wisdom psalms, not all of them, of course, but several of those tonight. And these sound like the book of Proverbs many times, but not always. Sometimes they just focus more on kind of setting two paths before someone. How am I going to live righteously under God's law is kind of what wisdom psalms are concerned with. We've looked at the structure of the book of Psalms, and what we're looking at just at the beginning of tonight is going to be Psalm 90. And remember, Psalm 89 is the last psalm in which book of the Psalms? Book 3. And so the Psalms at the beginning and end of the book, I think, are really important in the book of Psalms. And they're worth looking at the connections between those Psalms. And so we looked last week at Psalm 89, and tonight we're going to look at the other end of that, the seam, if you will, if you kind of count the divisions of the books as the seams. Sometimes those are called the seam Psalms. Psalm 1, Psalm 41, Psalm 42, Psalm 72, Psalm 73, 89, 90, 106, and 107. And those are just really helpful in getting us to see kind of the direction, the flow of the book of Psalms. And not every psalm is in a particular order, but there's organization and structure to the book that helps us. So we looked at Psalm 89, and we're going to look just briefly, and I hate how briefly we're going to have to look at Psalm 90. It's really cool. What's one of the coolest things about Psalm 90 as you approach the psalm? It's Moses, right? Wow. Usually we think of David in the book of Psalms, but this psalm is connected to Moses, I believe written by Moses. And this makes it easily the oldest psalm in the book of Psalms. So that's just really cool. What genre would you put this psalm into? And this is a little tricky. I have a hard time with this one a little bit, so don't feel bad if you had a hard time. But which genre would you put this psalm into? You might want to take a stab. There is a little bit. I think so. And particularly because it's by Moses. It's written a long time ago. I didn't put that one down. I think to some extent, it's almost like a wisdom lament. Because he's kind of reflecting on man and how short we are. Our lifetime is so short, and God is from everlasting to everlasting. So there's kind of this melancholy mood of the psalm. It's not a lament in some, like some of the other laments that are like, God, what's going on? You know, and really severe. It's more reflective than some of the other laments. But I think this is almost a wisdom psalm. I think verse 12 in particular. So teach us to number our days that we may get a heart of wisdom. Psalm 90, I think, is a psalm about perspective. And about reflecting on the big picture and on how God fits into the big picture. And reflecting on ourselves as we relate to that. So at least that's how I said it's a wisdom lament is kind of the way I put that. And again, it's not typical wisdom psalms like we're going to look at in just a few minutes. So this is written by Moses. And how is God viewed at the beginning of this psalm? Yes, he's the creator. And this is where we get that phrase, from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. And how else is God described? So he's eternal, he's powerful, but what title is given to him right there in verse 1? Lord, you're our dwelling place. That's kind of cool. How else might we put that in more modern day terms? In your home. God, you're home to us. When? In all generations. What a great thought. Wherever we are in the span of the timeline of earth, God is always home to us. Lord, you have been our dwelling place in all generations.
The New American Standard does adjust for dwelling place.
Yeah. And certainly God is pictured that way throughout the Psalms. He's our tower, our fortress, our refuge. That's cool. I haven't looked at that particular Hebrew word, but that'd be good to look into. So that is how God is pictured in the Psalm. He's this solid refuge, and he's eternal, and he's always somewhere we can go. He's always our home in the midst of all the turmoil of the ages. He's always there. How is man pictured in this Psalm? Yeah, we're here and we're just a wisp, you know, it's like a dream where we're like the grass that's just here and then it's gone and it's hard while we're here. You know, we're having to labor and work for the 70 or 80 years, you know, that we're here. And Moses is just reflecting on this. And, you know, I don't know the situation, but can you think of when Moses might have been writing this and what period of Israel's history? I suspect it's in the wandering in the wilderness as he's watching a generation of people pass away in the wilderness. And they're wandering. They don't have a home. You know, they've come out of slavery and now they're on the way to the promised land, but they're not there yet. Lord, you have been our dwelling place in all generations. It's just fitting, I think, to think about Moses leading God's people through the wilderness as one generation passes and another rises. And Moses is kind of getting to watch this. And it's powerful to think about that. So God is eternal. How does this psalm answer Psalm 89? Because remember, there is this, God, you're faithful. You made these promises to David. But what's happened to those promises to David? There's this tension in Psalm 89. How does Psalm 90 help to answer some of those questions? Yes. And isn't that what we need? is we need perspective. When we're in the moment and we know that God's promised things, but we're struggling, we just got to take a step back. And I feel like Psalm 89 is in the heat of the moment. Now, he's thinking about the past. He's calling God's promises to mind. But it's like Moses takes an even bigger step back, or Psalm 90. You know, it's just like zoom back and like, all right, let's go way back to the wilderness and think about Moses leading God's people and from everlasting to everlasting. The picture is way even bigger than we can even imagine because God is infinite. And we're just a speck. We're just grass. We're just dust. We're here and we're gone. And life is difficult. And so we got to just cling to God. Teach us to number our days so that we can get a heart of wisdom. And so I think that helps answer some of the problem. And it doesn't specifically answer the what's going to happen questions of Psalm 89. But it helps answer the how am I going to get through it questions of Psalm 89. Okay, we're going to cling to God. We're going to hold fast because he's got the whole picture. Natalie? Yeah. And that's why the Psalms help us so much, is they give us those images that we just can latch on to. God, I'm going to run to you and hide where you're at, you know. That's powerful. Lead me to the rock that's higher than I. You know, Psalm, I think, 61 talks about that. And that's the same kind of image here. Dan? Yeah, that's right. And I think that's really the thing we're supposed to get, whatever the original word was, is just he's always been there. He's been there before we were a nation, you know, like from everlasting to everlasting. He's God, and we can always go to him. And that's so comforting after the dark doubts of Psalm 89 to then start book 4 with a prayer of Moses, the man of God. Lord, you've been our refuge, our protection, our dwelling place in all generations. That's just powerful to see how that answers and helps. It's a refuge for us after the doubts of Psalm 89. And I think really books 4 and 5, there's going to be some laments in there. But like we talked about at the very beginning, the book of Psalms moves from mostly laments to mostly praise until the last 5 Psalms are straight praise. And the lament is drowned out by these just the overwhelming praise of God, and his glory is just what consumes everything by the end of the book. And I think this is kind of the turning point in the book in some ways. That books 1 through 3, book 3 has been particularly dark. And there's lots of why God and what's going on God in book 3. And it ends on really dark. And now Psalm 90 gets us looking back to God. And that's going to be kind of a big theme in the next Psalms. Several of the Psalms in the 90s are going to reflect on God as king. Particularly like Psalm 92 through 99. You just look at that. The Lord reigns is like the theme in those Psalms. It's just powerful. Okay. Other thoughts or comments on that? I wish we had more time to talk about this. Life is short. Teach us to number our days. Man, what a great prayer. You know, just thinking about that. And at the end, just the different petitions at the end of the psalm, I love how he repeats at the very end, establish the work of our hands. We're so short. Our lifespan is just here and gone. May what we do mean something, you know, establish the work. I think about Moses, you know, he didn't get to do what? He didn't get to go into the promised land, but we look back at Moses and say, what a success. What a great leader of God's people. God established the work of Moses' hands. And so we need to be working for things that are really going to last. We get so caught up in everything else, but just, Lord, teach us to number our days, establish the work of our hands. You're God from everlasting to everlasting. great themes of Psalm 90. So Psalm 89 and 90, I think, come back to promises and perspective. Psalm 89, God will keep his promises, but it looks like he hasn't. Don't let go. Don't give up on God. And bring your doubts and fears openly to God. That's one thing that the Psalms teach us to do. Actually, in a couple weeks, I think we're going to do Psalm 139, and we're going to talk about honesty in prayer. And just, we tend to be so buttoned up sometimes in our Western culture. And a lot of the prayers we hear up here, which are understandably, you know, more controlled than the Psalms are. But Psalm 89, he's very honest with God and with his doubts, and trust that God will answer even after the end. You know, Moses didn't get to go into the physical promised land, but Moses got to go to the promised land. Yes? Yeah, that's right. And Hebrews points that out. And you know, Moses, I think in particular, he's looking at a generation passing away because of God's wrath, because they rejected God's promises, and now they're reaping what they've sown in the wilderness. And so Psalm 90, God is our refuge, but he's also a God of wrath. And I think the Psalms are also a helpful place where we see the full nature of God come together, that you can trust him, you can flee to him, but don't mess with him. You know, don't trifle with him. He's a God to be feared and a God to be respected and honored and obeyed. But he's also a God to be loved and flee to him and find refuge in him. And the Psalms give us that picture. So Psalm 90, God is eternal and eternally faithful. There is much before us and after us. It's not about me. You know, we need that perspective. Teach us to number our days. Life is short, but God is good. And establish the work of our hands, labor for what matters. I just think, again, looking at some of these Psalms in pairs is helpful just to see how they balance each other out and are helpful for us. Any other comments or questions on these two Psalms? There's so much more we could say. This is one of my favorite places in the book of Psalms, and we may even come back to it later. I don't know. We'll see. Yeah. So if y'all didn't hear Lori, she's saying Moses notably doesn't talk about the law, but uses more of the reflection on the experiences of life, the perspective we get as the source of wisdom in this particular psalm. But speaking of the law, let's talk about some more wisdom psalms tonight. So we're going to look at Psalm 15 and 24, and we're just going to really touch on some wisdom psalms tonight. These are shorter psalms, but I want to just get a little flavor of some of these psalms as we go tonight. Psalm 15, what genre would you put this psalm into? Psalm 15. Yeah, tonight's pretty easy, right? It's wisdom. And particularly if you look at Psalm 15, O Lord, who shall sojourn in your tent? Who shall dwell in your holy hill? He who walks blamelessly and does what is right and speaks truth in his heart. And then he goes on and just, it's basically a list of the attributes of a righteous person. And then you look at Psalm 24, and it starts with some praise. The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, the world and those who dwell therein, for he has founded it upon the seas, established it upon the rivers. Who shall ascend the hill of the Lord, and who shall stand in his holy place? He who has clean hands and a pure heart, who does not lift up his soul to what is false and does not swear deceitfully. So that's kind of the connection point between these two psalms. They both ask this question, who can go up the hill of God? So there are wisdom psalms. There's some praise, especially in Psalm 24 as well. As you think about this, what does this mean to sojourn in God's tent or dwell on his holy hill? We don't use those phrases really about God, do we? What would that have meant to these people, to David who wrote these? Yeah, that's right. It is just, you don't just waltz into God's presence. You got to be purified. You got to be washed and cleaned before you go before a holy God. And so when we think about sojourning in his tent or on his holy hill, what's that a reference to? Yeah, and in particular, geographically, it's talking about Mount Zion. Now, apparently, you know, David moved the ark to Jerusalem, and we don't know where it was in Jerusalem. It may have already been on the Temple Mount, Mount Zion. And also, we know David made all the preparations for the temple. There's going to be some Psalms of David that talk about the temple, and it may have been he was writing those in preparation for temple worship, since he did a lot with organizing the musicians and all these different things, even though the temple was technically after the time of David. Solomon builds the temple. But he mentions that kind of thing. So I think that's the idea, is the temple, the sanctuary, the holy place, the most holy place, is viewed as approaching the presence of God. And so these psalms may have originally been used as, we're going to talk about songs of ascent later on in the book of Psalms. These may have also been used in that way, as people would approach God's temple or go to worship, or even when they were bringing the ark in from being out in battle or something, and they're coming back. Who shall ascend the hill of the Lord? Who can go there? Only people who are holy, who live righteously, can approach God. And so I think that's kind of what we're talking about here, is you need to be wise when you approach God. Follow him. Don't just waltz into his presence. So Psalm 15, we don't have time to get into all of these, but what a great list of just describing wise people. Sure. I have not thought about that perspective. And you know, there's probably some truth there. I suspect, and we're going to talk about this in a future Psalms class, one of the things the psalmists reflect on is, do people who go down to the grave praise you? You know, and they really focus on thanking God for keeping them alive and keeping them living and breathing here. And it's not to say that the Psalms don't anticipate an afterlife. There are certainly places that talk about and anticipate that. The resurrection of Jesus is in the Psalms, you know. I hadn't thought of these from an eternal perspective. I thought this more of as a, I'm coming in a special way into the presence of God. Who can ascend his holy hill? And it's not to say that we're in the presence of God like we will be after this life. But these psalms reflect more on, we need to be living holy if we're going to approach God in worship or in prayer or those types of things. Is how I've taken those, at least. Greg? Yeah, and I mean, certainly biblically, whether or not that's what these psalms are talking about, that's certainly true biblically. I suspect these psalms are talking more about something that happens in this life, but many of those things foreshadow what comes after this life. Yeah, exactly. He's talking about covenant faithfulness. You know, the one who doesn't lift up his soul to what is false, speaks truth in his heart. He's not slandering his neighbor. And again, God is not just concerned with how we treat him. Or how we worship. What else is he concerned with? How we treat each other. We cannot, how does John say it in 1 John 4? You cannot love God whom you haven't seen if you hate your brother whom you have seen, or if you don't love your brother whom you have seen. The vertical and horizontal relationships are connected in the Old Testament and the New Testament. This is righteous living. This is how it's pictured. So I want to talk for a minute about Psalm 24, and this is something I'm not 100% sure on, but I wanted to see what y'all made of it as well. There's three kind of distinct sections of Psalm 24. Verses 1 and 2, praise God as being the creator of everything, the earth and everything in it. God made it. And then there's this kind of Psalm 15 section in verses 3 through 6, where there's a question, who shall ascend the hill of the Lord? He'll receive blessing. You know, this is the generation of those who seek him, who seek the face of the God of Jacob. And then there's this closing section, 7 through 10, where it's kind of 7 and 8 are the same, and then, or 7 and 8 are repeated in 9 and 10. It says it twice. And it's this picture of like the King of Glory, the Lord, coming into the gates. You know, lift up your heads, ancient doors. And so, really interesting. It's almost like three different psalms, like kind of put together. But like, how do we put this psalm together, Psalm 24? What, did y'all have comments or thoughts on how that kind of fits together? Okay, yeah. But there is kind of a coming in. I think that's a key concept in this last section. Yeah, I think that's about right. As y'all can't hear her, you know, be ready. God's coming in. And so if you want to dwell where he is on his holy hill, here he comes. Make yourself holy. That's like what John the Baptist said, you know, make every mountain low, bring the valleys up, make your path straight because the Lord's coming. And so I think there's a similar message here in Psalm 24. So it praises God for creating everything. It says he founded it upon the seas, which is kind of like, what does that mean? You remember that one of God's first acts of creation has to do with the waters, and that kind of everything is water initially, and then he divides the waters from the waters, and then divides those waters, and dry land appears. So I think that it kind of goes back to that idea that he founded it on the seas. This is also interesting. This verse 1 is quoted in 1 Corinthians 10, and that whole discussion about idol meat, and then the kind of addendum section at the end where he's like, well, what about eating meat sold in the market? And said, hey, go ahead and eat it. Don't ask questions for the sake of conscience, because the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. So it's kind of interesting how this psalm is quoted in the New Testament to say, hey, God made everything, enjoy. Now, if you find out it was offered to an idol, well, that's different. But God made everything here for us to enjoy. And so use it, you know. And so that's kind of interesting how that's used in 1 Corinthians 10. And so then there's kind of this question of God made everything. The earth is His and everything it contains. Who is going to come into the presence of this God who created everything that we've ever known? And, you got to have clean hands and a pure heart. Don't lie. Don't lift up your soul to what's false. And then there's this question here particularly of the hill of the Lord, His holy place, Mount Zion. And then there's a picture of the Lord coming to His holy place, stepping into His sanctuary. I read in one place that this last part may have been sung when the Ark of the Covenant was coming back into the city of Jerusalem after a military victory. You know, and that the Lord has, we'll talk about this later in Psalm 68. We talked about it in Ephesians 4 where, you know, the king of the hill, he comes down the hill to conquer and then he ascends the hill, leading the host of captives. This is kind of that ascension picture again. Is God's coming back up His holy hill, lift up the gates. Who's coming in? The Lord of hosts, strong and mighty. The Lord, mighty in battle. Lift up your heads, O gates. Lift them up, O ancient doors, that the King of glory may come in. Who is this King of glory? The Lord of hosts, or the Lord of armies is the idea there. He is the King of glory. So there's a military flavor to this as well, as the Lord comes to dwell on His holy hill. Who's with Him? He who has clean hands and pure heart. It's kind of how this all, at least that's how I see it. Yeah, cool. I haven't looked at it from that perspective. That's helpful. So as we think about this, again, it could have been this, who can approach Him. We just need to, like we've really already said, what's the point for us? I think about Isaiah 66, where God says, heaven is my throne, earth is my footstool. Where's the house you're going to build for me? But to this one I will look. To you who is humble, contrite of heart, and the one who trembles at my word. Who's going to ascend the hill of the Lord? He dwells with those who are humble. And again, it's not just with those who are perfect, but it's those who are confessing their sin and turning back to God. They're cleansing their hearts, not because we're perfect, but because we're repenting, is the idea. And God has mercy on those people. He uses the lowly of the earth to bring into His presence. And so as we're approaching God, that's just really helpful. And that even worship is a time to examine ourselves. You know, we're told to do that, especially during the Lord's Supper. Dan? Yeah. And again, as we're just talking about this, isn't it just awesome to think about how the Psalms call us to take refuge in God, and yet how they, like this Psalm, don't trifle with Him. Don't just come into His presence with sin. You know, you get that cleansed. You make that right. And you come into, and of course it's God who cleanses us. We come to Him for cleansing, and then we can come into His presence. It's like with Jesus, you know, people fall down, and then He picks them up and makes them able to stand in His presence. This is cool. Let's talk briefly about Psalm 19. And again, man, this is so much good here. What genre? This is a more familiar psalm to us, probably. The heavens declare the glory of God. The firmament shows His handiwork. What genre? Into what genre would you put this psalm? Yeah, it's a wisdom psalm, I think, primarily, but it's praise. Wow, you know, especially that middle section or that beginning section. The heavens are just glorifying God. So there's three sections of this psalm. What sections were you able to pick out of this psalm? What's the first section? Verses 1 to 6, very good. And it's about what? Yeah, the heavens themselves, the things God made are just bursting forth. And He mentions the skies in particular, and in particular, what in the skies? Yeah, the sun, right? He mentions the sun in particular. So this is powerful. The heavens by day and by night declare His glory. And this tells us that, you know, there's nowhere that their voice is not heard. They don't say anything, but everybody knows something about God because of what He's made. This goes back to Romans 1, right? Even the Gentiles are without excuse because they can see that He's divine and He's powerful. You know, this is not, it wasn't a man that made that, and it was something incredibly powerful. And so every land that the sun and publishes to every land, the work of an almighty hand, as if we have time, we'll sing that in just a minute, God's creation tells us something about God. They proclaim his handiwork and his power. But then what's the second section of the psalm? Verses 7 through 10 or 11. We don't sing verse 11, but it's, I think, part of that section. Actually, it was in a place where they would sing Psalm 19, like the law of the Lord. And then at the end, they would quote verse 11 at the end of the psalm. I thought that was kind of interesting, just to kind of finish the section, finish the thought. What's this section about? Yeah, his law, his precepts. I mean, again, this is one of those places where he exhausts the thesaurus. Lord willing, next week, Jim Ruff is going to lead y'all through Psalm 119. This is like mini Psalm 119 here, which, by the way, easy to remember, right? Psalm 19. Psalm 119. They have that. It's nice when the numbers line up. I don't think the numbers are inspired, but that's a helpful memory tool when they do line up like that. So powerful. And what does God's word tell us that his creation doesn't? Yeah, like what God expects from us. We might be able to see, wow, he's amazing, and I got to guess at what he wants. You know, like he didn't like inscribe on the trees, like, I want sacrifices or something. And he's communicated with his creation, but through his word. And so this second section, his law reveals even more about God. So God is revealed in his creation, he's revealed in his word, and then there's this last section, and the tone changes pretty dramatically in verses 12 through 14. What's the end of the psalm like? Yeah, it's kind of like the word of God within me, you know? Okay, this isn't just a concept. It's not looking like, oh, cool, he made cool stuff. Oh, nice, he wrote a good book. What does it have to do with me? How am I going to have to live differently because of what God has shown me about himself? It's kind of how this psalm goes together. There's three parts of the psalms, of this psalm. So you're reacting to God's glory and God's law. And what's his question there? He kind of talks about two different types of sin at the end there in verse 12 and 13. What are the two types of sin that he talks about? I think so. In verse 12 where he says, declare me innocent from hidden faults, is like there's times where we sin and we didn't realize it. Like Paul, you know, when he reviled God's high priest and said, whoa, sorry, I didn't know he was high priest, otherwise I wouldn't have said that. This is a hidden fault. What's the other one? It says, keep back your servant also from presumptuous sins, is the ESV, but that idea of just presuming, and you go ahead and do it. You're well aware of what you're doing. And so cleansing from both of those things. I let them not have dominion over me. Then I shall be blameless, innocent of great transgression. And I love verse 14. Let the words of my mouth and the thoughts of my heart, or the meditation of my heart, be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer. That should really be our reaction as we learn more and more about God, is we just want to be pleasing in his sight. Lord, let my words and my heart be pleasing to you. That's how we react to that. Thoughts or comments? That's such a quick treatment of Psalm 19. But did y'all have questions or other applications that you had from that? Well, let's take just a minute. I really want to get to Psalm 37. Yes? So if you would, we're actually going to leave Psalm 37 for a different time. And we're going to come back to that. I really like Psalm 37, but it's even longer than these. So we're going to put a bookmark there. If you would turn your page over, All Things Praise Thee loosely comes from Psalm 19. The Spacious Firmament. Do we know this song here? Like, do you guys know the Spacious Firmament? Okay, like a couple of us. Okay. Because we haven't sung it in my time here. I sung it growing up. What I'd like to do is we're going to sing The Spacious Firmament on High to Sweet Hour of Prayer, because I think we know that tune. And then if you have your supplement open to number 92, The Law of the Lord, we're just going to go straight into that. We're going to sing that one right into the other. And I wish we had more time tonight to meditate on the words of the spacious firmament. It's a bit poetic, but what it's saying is the heavens declare the glory of God, is verse 1. The sun displays his handiwork. Verse 2 talks about, well, the sun has proclaimed his glory during the day. Now the moon takes up his praise in the night. And she tells the earth about when she was born, so to speak. And the stars and the planets, everything that God made is proclaiming his name. And then in the last verse, it says they're silent. But it doesn't matter that they're silent. In reason's ear, they all rejoice. When we look at what God has made, we learn about who God is. The hand that made us is divine. That's what we can learn from God's creation. So we're going to sing this to Sweet Hour of Prayer, and then go straight into number 92 in the supplement, The Law of the Lord, and then we'll wrap up for tonight.